On this episode of Baseball Barbecast, we recap the weekend. Three sweeps and a mop. Jays taking all four against the A's. Brewers going into Philly, getting the job done. O's and Mets sweep as well. We highlight some of the other best series from the weekend. Dodgers, Yankees, Mariners, Twins, Tigers, Royals. Here comes Jack Caglione. And so much more on this weekend recap edition of Baseball Barbecast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who thinks that maybe Shohei Ohtani shouldn't be falling asleep on the job. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and I don't know, mix it a coffee? Ever heard of it?
Who would ever fall asleep when they're supposed to be focused on their job? I can't even fathom. Jake slept through his alarm. It's okay. We don't have to give him crap for that because Jake is here starting maybe a few minutes later than expected. But it is Monday morning. We are back in our respective homes. I guess you're not in your actual home. You're in your OG home. The classic mom's basement setup is one of Jake's best. So if you're watching on YouTube, you are getting prime Jake Mintz. Yes, fresh off a red-eye flight. We have a lot to get to. Lot of baseball to recap from the weekend. We are no longer in the same place. Hopefully everyone enjoyed the pods we got to record together in my home here in Ohio. But now we are back in our little virtual boxes ready to recap the weekend. And Jake, we have three sweeps and one mop, and that is where we are going to begin. How sweep it is.
Clean up, everybody.
There is no shame in getting swept.
I never got swept.
You guys got swept.
I'm just walking around town telling people how mop it is, and they're looking at me like, that's not a sentence.
Yeah, guess we got to come up with a different phrase for that.
I mean, really, the phrase for that is mop, 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 mop,
mop, mop, mop. Mop? I'm kind of into mop.
Let's start with our mop. Let's do it.
I'm wearing a Jays hat. You win four games in a weekend. Was this the most impressive one? Again, our four sweeps/mops this weekend were three teams beating three very bad teams, and then one team that we have no idea how good they are beating a team that we think is very good in Milwaukee. But sorry, Brewers, we're going to get to you in a second. Let's start with that mop. The Toronto Blue Jays explode for 39 runs in four games against the YOLO A's, who are having a tough go of it. This has been a very, very bad stretch, and if there was something that was going to get the Blue Jays offense going, it was going to be an A's pitching staff that now ranks last in baseball in ERA. Yes, they have allowed more runs earned runs on a per game basis than the Colorado Rockies. They have lost 21 of their last 24 games, but let's focus on the Jays because they are in second place in the American League East. And while this mopping of the A's is not necessarily an example that they are suddenly a World Series contender, it's good to see. It's good to see for Toronto. And in an AL East where no one really wants to step up and challenge the Yankees, this was a refreshing showing from a Toronto team.
You say that, but these games also matter. And taking care of business and taking four against a bad A's team, to me, I think is a really good sign that they have their ducks in a row, that they're not getting tripped up as much as maybe they were earlier in the season. Maybe it's small sample size, who knows? But this was impressive, and I want this Jays team to go for it at the deadline because the Vlad contract, the Vlad extension, almost hides some of the urgency that remains for this season. Because when we were heading into 2025, it was like Vlad free agency, Bo free agency, Chris Bassett free agency.
Yeah, like, old pitching staff, right? Felt like a window was closing.
Yeah, it was like now or never. And then they extended Vlad, and that's great. That's awesome. No notes. Obviously a good thing. But the narrative of this season, I think, hasn't changed that much with it. Because, I mean, Bo's been awesome.
Yeah. Bo is heating up in a way. He's finally hitting some home runs, right? It took him weeks for him. He hadn't homered last year for the last, you know, 3 or 4 months. And now he's up to 7. Now there is, Bo is an important part of this, right? Because there is still that level of urgency with him. Where does he kind of play his way into in terms of the market that he's able to command this winter? Are they able to extend him as well? You know, he's someone who has also, you know, communicated a degree of interest in staying there long term. But them kind of playing better and just being back in the mix and being within shouting distance of a postseason spot, I agree, especially after how last year's deadline went, where they traded as many guys as they could that weren't Vlad. This would be fun for them to see them go for it. Now, they don't have a great farm system, so I'd be curious to see how they go about doing that, but it would be nice to see them be aggressive.
And we've talked about this with them. What's so important is the second level of supporting cast contributing. And that's what happened over the weekend.
Yep.
Ernie Clement hits a homer in game 2. Addison Barger, who looks pretty sweet,
third straight game
with a homer. Like, that's what this team needs. That's what this offense needs in order to take that next step.
Yeah. And again, there are still some pretty concerning trends on this roster. That's Anthony Santander has been atrocious and is now injured. That's Andrés Giménez has been atrocious and is now injured. I think he's going to be back sooner than Santander. Some of their high money guys, you know, Max Scherzer has thrown three innings. So there, and Jeff Hoffman, by the way, recently his ERA has skyrocketed after his amazing first few months. But Jeff Hoffman, we're still feeling good about, you know, moving forward.
Good player.
Yeah, not everything is going great here, but you're starting to see what it was supposed to look like, which is Bo and Vlad kind of carrying. Springer has continued to be very productive, which is great. Kirk's starting to play better. And as I mentioned before, like, nobody wants to jump up and make it interesting in this division. Fine. I do think Toronto has enough talent to stay relevant here, if not challenging the Yankees, you know, in the wild card mix, because we know that that is way more of a lower standard than I think we thought going into the season. And why can't Toronto be in that mix?
Quickly on the A's, who have now lost 20 win out of 24 games. So,
oh my God, they were 20-16 and everyone was like, ooh, here come the A's. Ooh. Oh, 21 of 24, man. Oh my God.
That's Rockies type stuff.
It is.
I hate that I feel like a A's hater, right? That I want this ownership group to look stupid. And I don't like that because it's not the players' fault and they're doing their best and they're out there grinding through what is clearly a tough situation in Sacramento that's, you know, not a great facility. Like, I feel bad that the players are suffering. But, you know, besides that, it is kind of a victimless crime for this team to be bad because, like, the Sacramento fans who just got the team, I guess, are like, oh, well, they just got this team. And then the A's fans from Oakland are like, woohoo! I'm not saying that I'm rooting against the A's, but I am happy that John Fisher is maybe a little less happy. Now, a quick story here. So I did take a red eye last night. I had a wedding in Reno, Nevada. Okay. And I flew through Las Vegas, Nevada. Hmm. And I landed in Vegas and I was walking around the airport and I saw like a Vegas Raiders themed shop. And as I walked by it, I thought, God, we're going to have to go to Vegas at some point to cover a baseball game. And I just
it's going to be the All-Star game. Let's be real. We know that if this stadium does ever get built, that's kind of part of the game. So I don't know whether that's going to be, you know, 2030 or it's going to be a while, but it feels more likely than us going there for a postseason game. You know, I could be wrong about that, but that's just how it looks right now. This is many, many years away for many reasons.
Lastly, last day's thing. I will be in Sacramento in 2 weeks for a night to see this.
All right. Okay.
And I'm
curious about that too, because like, this is the other thing. It's not like they've been packing that place out.
Yeah,
there's not that many seats to pack, so not great. It sucks for them. It sucks for the fans that do care, whether they're in Oakland, whether they're in Sacramento. It sucks for the players. If you strictly focus on the field, it's kind of the team we expected. They can hit. They got some fun hitters, and Jacob Wilson, you know, runaway favorite right now for AL Rookie of the Year, and They got Soderstrom is kind of heating back up after a slow stretch. Rooker and like these get some good hitters, but the pitching is, even though they have sort of invested in it over the offseason, it's not nearly good enough. And we kind of knew that coming in, and that's where they're at. But as for Toronto, credit to them. They really needed that from an offensive standpoint too, because they had just been powerless. I mean, that is really was their struggle in the first few months. It's just they were bottom five in home runs. I think now they're kind of closer up to the middle of the pack, and they will take that. So we'll see where this Toronto season goes, but it was definitely an encouraging weekend.
Most impressive sweep of the weekend happened in the city of brotherly love, as Milwaukee taking 3 out of 3 from the Philadelphia Phillies, who I believe entered the series with the best record in the National League. Still have that, but the Phils were hot rolling in. And the Brewers were coming off a 3-game sweep of the Red Sox. And we talked about that. We framed it as Red Sox lose series. Brewers there too. And maybe we should apologize for that, as the Brewers roll into Philly next and take all 3 games. Very impressive. Game one, DL Hall off of it. He and Queen Priester piggyback and go 9. Christian Yelich, 2 homers. Game two, Jesus Luzardo's NL Cy Young candidacy goes up in
we had a few Cy Young candidates kind of poop their pants this weekend, but none more than Jesus Luzardo. Now, why they left him out there that long was a little strange.
The Phillies bullpen stinks, and they kind of needed him to wear it. Sure. He has 12 earnies and records just 10 outs.
Not Reese, a good ratio.
Hoskins, congrats, dude. 2 bombs back. In Philly, dude, it's so funny. I saw, like, after Harper got hit, I saw a tweet on Philly World that was like, if Harper's hurt, like, I would be open to bringing Reese back. And it's like, guys, like, you have Bryce Harper at first and God-level Kyle Schwarber at DH. Let it go. Like, it's Reese is happy. Fine.
Yeah, let him live in Milwaukee. Wherever he goes in free agency this winter, which is probably not going to be Philadelphia, Philly. That's fine. Yeah,
Me tell you this. You don't want it to be Philly, okay? Because you want them to keep Kyle Schwarber around.
Yes, because he's absolutely.
Respectfully.
Also, Bryce Harper's not that hurt. Like, this is not like fine. A season career altering injury for Bryce Harper. You're fine.
Look, we loved and we learned and we're letting go. All right? Yes. Brewers win that one 17-7. You remember last year when everyone was like, wow, the Brewers created this dude named Tobias Myers. What is a Tobias Myers? Well, this year they did it with a guy named Chad Patrick.
Yes. Honestly, a perfect comp for so many reasons. Both of those guys had been traded multiple times while in the minors. They were never really top prospects. But Chad Patrick's just finding outs. And I had him 3rd on my NL Rookie of the Year ballot that I put last week. Just because it was like, dude, it's hard to be a reliable starting pitcher as a rookie, full stop. And he has been that one way or another. It's not awesome stuff, but it is classic Brewers. Yeah. And it's the kind of thing that, like, again, like as we've seen with Stearns and with the Mets, they're good teams. Smart teams are good at having situations like this where it's just a pitcher that it's like, okay, I don't really know how he's doing it, but he's getting outs. And even if Chad Patrick sucks the rest of the way, for how good he's been so far, has been an awesome rookie season.
Awesome rookie season in a time when the Brewers needed reliable starting pitching.
Big time. And big time.
His stuff sounds like the name Chad Patrick. Yep. Game 3, Ranger Suarez was good. And then Trey Turner just doinks a really simple inning defense. And a double play.
We got Weston Wilson just missing fly balls because he's not an outfielder. Matt Gelb wrote a good piece about the Phillies defense at The Athletic, which I appreciated. And yeah, it's just, you know, it wasn't the best showing for the Phillies. Obviously, you get swept at home. It's never a good feeling, but it was just a little bit like, oh, yeah, I guess those are some things that are not great about the Phillies.
Before we give the Brewers some love, a couple Phillies things here. Taiwan Walker, who has been way more than a 0 this year. He was a negative last year. They're going to move him to late inning, 1-inning relief. They want to see if it plays up in short spurts, if they can use him in that situation because their bullpen has been so bad and because they lost Jose Alvarado to the PEDs.
Ooh,
they need as much help as they can get. So Walker's going to go to the bullpen. Jose Ruiz, who for whatever reason, Dave Dombrowski and Rob Thompson believed in longer than they needed to, he's DFA'd. Seth Johnson, who is a hard-throwing relief, a starter turn relief prospect. He's going to come up and get a shot in the back end. And then they're going to put Mick Abel back into the rotation for the foreseeable future until Aaron Nola's ready, which could be as long as a month. So
I didn't realize that was that serious.
Well, he still has to build back up. Like it could be as, I phrased it like that, could be as long as a month. Could be tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Won't be tomorrow. Yeah. Brewers. You guys are so confusing. And I love you for it. Because if you look at the baseball reference page and you see a lineup with a team OPS plus of 92, it's like, how you do this? If I told you that the Brewers were irrationally hot or like four games above 500 this year, you'd be like, well, Christian Yelich must be figuring it out, on fire. He had two homers in game one of the series.
He's had a good couple weeks. He has gotten back his line back up to above league average.
Right. But he has not been full knocking boots, taking names, Christian Yelich by any means.
But that's why I think as we spin this forward, you know, they've won seven in a row. They're still 5.5 back of Milwaukee. Like, what is the path here? Like, is it a good thing that they're still sort of hanging around and they have a lot of these things going wrong? What do we believe is going to get that much better? I think in some ways, I think you could say yes.
Here's how you know a Brewers team is a Brewers team. The two guys with the highest OPS pluses on the team, or we'll say the three highest, I guess, are not the three highest in wins above replacement. because the whole thing about the Brewers is that they're finding value under every rock, right? Sure. I would imagine most teams, the hitting output and the overall value are way more correlated than the Brewers are, where the two best hitters this year have been Jake Bowers and Rhys Hoskins, and the two most valuable players this year have been Bryce Terang and William Contreras.
Yeah.
Who are essentially, Contreras has been disappointing offensively, but because he's a catcher with a 722 OPS, like that's valuable.
Yeah. And I think too, if you think about how they were good last year, especially in the second half, you had Contreras making a case for being the best catcher in baseball, which at this point we know is probably a little overblown, but he's in the mix. It's not like he's having a bad season, but it's much worse than last year. And then you had this ascendant Jackson Churio, which is the other name that we have to mention. And Churio, while he has basically played every game and has a bunch of doubles, has also been disappointing. He has a 285 on base. We knew that was going to maybe be a problem for this very eager, hyper-aggressive, one of the youngest hitters in the league. The talent is still on display every once in a while, but on the whole, the value has just not been there. Again, this is not saying he's doomed to never become a superstar. Sure. It's just that what we saw in the second half of last year, which was one of the best players in the National League, that has just not been the case this year. And so you could say, well, guess what? Well, why can't Jackson Churio go nuclear in the second half again? You're right. He could. That talent is still there. But in terms of how they got here, he isn't one of the biggest answers. He just isn't. He just hasn't been on base enough and has 56 strikeouts to 9 walks.
I mean, he's younger than Olivia Rodrigo.
Yeah, no, again, not worried, not concerned. But if we were going into zero being like, wait a minute, he might be one of the best players in baseball, that hasn't been the case at least yet. And then on the mound, you know, it's just very Brewers-y stuff. Freddy Peralta continues to do his thing. Quintana has been massive for them. I know he had a bit of an injury stint, but I think that's the other part where there's maybe upside with Milwaukee if they can start to get healthier, if they do call up Jacob Mizorowski. Maybe there are still spots of this pitching staff that are going to be even better than it have been so far. Priester has been kind of up and down since they got him. Yeah. If Patrick's going to be this good, I don't know. Again, do I think they're going to catch the Cubs? Do I think they're a better team than the Cubs on paper or in reality? No. But we were ready to maybe write them off as a possible deadline seller, and that feels a little bit less likely now.
Jordan, it is a small sample size, but I would like you to look at the statistics of one Mr. Rob Zastrzyzny.
Oh my gosh, Rob Z. So, 6 games, but he's looking good.
Rob Z, one of the OG Cespedes Family Barbecue friends. The gentleman who was taken off the playoff roster in 2016 for a returning Kyle Schwarber. Rob Z is cooking with gas for the Milwaukee Brewers. Let's go.
Is it gas?
Love that guy.
How hard is he throwing? I have no idea.
He's cooking with Flint and He's cooking. He's finding
ways to produce fire. Okay. Yeah, interesting. Anyway, 6 scoreless innings, 9 strikeouts, 1 walk for Rob Z. What a lovely gentleman. But yeah, I just, like I said, I think because the Brewers were an interesting character from a deadline perspective, we might have to put that on pause for now.
Sure. Mets sweep the Rockies because I...
What? The Rockies? Wait a minute. The Rockies got swept?
Seriously? Yeah, dude, the Rockies got swept and they are now 9 and 50. They are 9 and 50, baby.
All right. Hey, I look, want you to rank 41, these three. Yeah.
Dude, they're 41 wins away. 41 wins away from being right back at 500.
I want you to rank these three facts.
Yeah.
Rockies are 9 and 50. That's one option. Rockies have been swept 9 times and mopped another. That's another option.
Okay.
And 3, the Rockies have lost all 19 of their series, and I believe now have the record for most series lost in a row, dating back to, I think the last team to lose to the Rockies in a series was the Diamondbacks in September of last year, which is relevant because that's basically why the Diamondbacks didn't make the postseason. So, wow. Which in retrospect, we were not looking at that as like, that's why. But now that really ages poorly for the Snakes.
I was at a family wedding over the weekend. I was talking ball with my wife's cousin. Okay.
As one
I was like, yeah, the Rockies are on pace to be the worst team of all time. She was like, they are? I was like, yeah, they're 9-49 at the time. And she was like, what? Jordan, I appreciate your question. Do not underrate what 9-50 does to a person. Okay. That is preposterous sounding. Because, and maybe when they become 10-55, that changes. But the single digit wins
just
on June 2nd.
Okay, before we go to the Mets, one more Rockies thing.
Why?
The Rockies this year. That's true. Rockies this year are 3-0 following 8-game losing streaks.
Oh my God.
They're currently on an L8. They head to Miami this week.
Oh, this book is it.
This is big time, okay? Because we've been wondering when are the Rockies going to win a series. This is an opportunity here. In Miami, we got, and tonight, Monday, it's a Monday through Wednesday series, 3-0. Were they going to go 4-0 after an L8? We're going to find out. Or are they going to keep losing and 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 losing? Oh my God, the Rockies. Okay, the Mets.
I don't want to spend too much time on the Mets because you beat the Rockies, but...
You're back in first place. You're back in first place. You swept the Rockies and the Phillies got swept, so now the Mets are back in first place. That's the takeaway for the weekend.
Sure.
And Juan Soto.
Well, that's the thing. Soto, 2 homers. Yeah. Lindor, 2 homers in game 1. A homer's again in game 3. We get the Soto, Alonso, Lindor, homer in all in the same game, which is the totality of their offense in that game. And like, yes, that's what it looks like. And even though things have gone well for the Mets so far this year, they have gone well in like weird ways that people didn't expect, like 3 weeks of God-level Brett Beatty and, you know,
Griffin. We thought Canning, Pete was coming for the MVP, man. I mean, Pete cooled off. Lindor is just kind of still quietly doing his thing. But yeah, nice to see Soto kind of get into one there. Again, Rockies, but better to do it. I mean, if he had a tough weekend against the Rockies, now we can start kind of sounding the alarm, and that did not happen.
Mets heading to LA for a fascinating opportunity against the Dodgers.
Oh, that's a 4-game series?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, because I was going to say, I mean, that's awesome because that's more, you know, big games between relevant teams. I do kind of wish we had today to like take a breather before we dive right back into Mets Dodgers.
You're telling me.
I'm telling you, buddy. Right. Yeah, you slept through your alarm. But Mets Dodgers, 4 games. That is, we got a 4 game series this week. But that is definitely Padres at Giants, also relevant in that discussion too. Anyway, Mets, good for you. Anything else on the Mets to the Dodgers? Whatever.
No.
We'll talk about it later this week. Great. No, Orioles over the White Sox.
Orioles sweep the White Sox.
They did it. First sweep of the year.
Okay,
for the Birds. Oh, baby.
They did it. Raise the banner. Also, A's have a worse ERA. So, great weekend for Baltimore. Do you remember last week after the Tarek Skubal game? And I said that both the Guardians and the Tigers fans could leave that series feeling good?
Yes.
I think this is the opposite. I think the Orioles only won these games, was it 2-1, 4-2, and 3-2?
Yep.
Wins are wins. I understand that.
The run differential, which is still one of the worst in baseball, was not helped against this lowly White Sox team. In fact, it's still way worse than the White Sox.
Yes. It is better than losing a game, sure. But you do not watch these Orioles sweep these White Sox and feel more confident in the operation.
They had to grind out. They had to grind out these wins against the White Sox.
I actually think it might be the least impressive sweep of the year.
Okay. Hey, that's fine. Let's give them some amount of credit. There are some things that are going well for the Orioles right now.
Sure. Zach Eflin boosts his trade stock with 7 scoreless in game one. Felix Bautista shaky holds it down. They win 2-1. Game two, Dean Kremer. He can be all right sometimes.
Ringing endorsement.
It's
true. You're not wrong.
Sometimes
the enthusiasm is lacking. But Jackson Holliday, this is exciting. This is important.
Jackson Holliday looks like a major league baseball player now. Even better than that, actually.
With Ethan Holliday in the crowd. Matt Holliday Collision? And Ethan Holliday were sitting in,
who's Ethan Holliday?
Seems like
who's
the Ethan normal Holliday? Seats. Ethan Holliday is Jackson's younger brother. Who, if you're thinking, oh, could they be teammates? Well, I don't think the Orioles are going to be in position to select Ethan Holliday, as he is expected to go somewhere in the first 4 picks. He is a candidate to go first overall to the Nationals. If not, he very well could go 4th overall to the team that employed his father for a long time, the Colorado Rockies.
Oh, no!
But the point is, Ethan Holliday is one of the top, maybe the top player in this year's draft class, and we'll be talking about him more next month. But he was there. They were just sitting in the crowd. They weren't even, no suite or anything. They were just hanging out. So, and Jackson Holliday's been great. What is his line up to? He is hitting this year 269, 319, 440.
Great.
That's great.
Good baseball
He's 21.
Player.
Really good.
Sure.
That's a good player to have. Not saving the Orioles season, that's for sure. But nice to see him not be awful like he was last year.
There was a weird play in this game where, like, Kobe Mayo is not playing well.
Not it. As a not major boosting leaguer. His trade stock.
Not boosting his trade. What's the opposite of boosting your trade stock? Tanking your trade stock.
Sapping.
Kobe Mayo runs out of the baseline in a rundown and just doinks into, I believe it was Lenin Sosa.
Yeah.
Is that right? And
one of these
just
White Sox infielders,
The bench is clear because it was a dumb move by Kobe Mayo. But what he was trying to do was to like draw contact in order to get an obstruction call, which is just too big, Brett. Just take the out. I was talking to a friend of the program, Chelsea Janes of the Washington Post, about this. She said, dudes have been trying to get out of rundowns for a century. Okay, just play it straight.
Kobe Mayo.
You're not reinventing the wheel here, guy.
I am not that this play is that important to this point, but I am worried as to like how this ends up in any sort of positive place. The Orioles, and then on Sunday, I think this is maybe the biggest thing for the Orioles, whether they suck or not. Charlie Morton has turned it around. Charlie Morton, remember, he starts that game where they lose by 20 to the Reds. He has one more outing where he like walks 5 in relief, and it's just like, that's it. Like at that point, we're just like, that might be the end of Charlie Morton's career. Since then, 2.76 ERA in his last 29 innings, 28 strikeouts, 3 walks, looked great on Sunday, quality start. Again, Orioles still barely won this game, but they did it, and Charlie Morton looks back to being a competent 5 starter. Congratulations.
Tweet from Jacob Calvin Mayer of the Baltimore Sun. Brian Baker, Orioles reliever, on the court. Different attitude in the Orioles clubhouse recently. It seems like everybody's looser. We're having a little bit of fun. It's easier to have fun when you win, but it seems like everyone's having more fun. We're looser. We're not uptight. It's contagious. Jordan, what's the difference between looser and loser? What's the difference?
You stole my line. They added a no. Oh. The O's. See the O's. Like this is O's. The key. This is dude, but this is important. O's. They're the O's. They're not the O. If you're just the O, if you're just you're the loser. Baltimore O, then you're the then you're a loser. But if everybody's you have multiple loser. O's, now we're loser.
All right. Thank you.
O's alive? probably not.
No.
White Sox are bad. Orioles are slightly better. Let's take a break. When we return, we highlight four other series, including one that comes with some breaking news. Oh boy, Jack Caglione's coming to the big leagues. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the league. A couple other interesting series.
Let's begin. The Dodgers,
I don't want to begin.
Yankees.
I don't want to begin with Dodgers, Yankees.
No, yeah, series, screw them.
This series didn't Friday night was a banger. The rest didn't live up to the hype. So let's do Tigers Royals very quickly and talk about that breaking news.
Yes, let's do it. First, let's tell you what happened in the series. Tigers won again, obviously.
Duh.
G. Matt Cash said it shall be. They win 7-5 on Friday. This was, again, very different than the Saturday and Sunday games. We got homers from Riley Green. We got Torque. Dylan Dingler. Torque. I mean, listen, this Tigers offense has just been really good. Torque's a big part of that. Casey Mize, not as good. Seth Lugo, also not as good. Come back from the IL. Tigers win 7-5. Then, on Saturday, Tarik Skubal back on the mound. And guess what? Tarik Skubal looked like Tarik Skubal again. But this time, the Tigers offense was asleep because Michael Wacha shut them down. Vinny Pasquantino with an RBI late against the Tigers bullpen. And the Royals win 1-0. And then, because baseball is just balances out this way, on Saturday, Skubal dominates. Tigers lose. On Sunday, Chris Bubich dominates. And the Royals lose. As the Tigers win that one 1-0. We get, I mean, this is just classic Tigers. Keiter Montero, Tyler Holton, Chase Lee, Tommy Canley, Will Vest for the shutout. And
winning
what
that game after losing the Skubal game is so great. I did a bunch of research on this little nugget, so I want to share it. First game of the year without an RBI.
Okay, so how did the run score?
Wild pitch. Just
wild pitch. Love that.
Bubich just wow, baby. And so no one gets an RBI.
Okay.
I want to see how rare that is, where there is a Major League Baseball game with no RBI.
Yeah. I mean, 1-0 games are already fairly rare, even though we had back-to-back ones here. But that is a good little nugget there. But what
sounds like the Royals could use some runs.
What did this news bring? Well, here it comes. Jack Caglione, first-round pick. Last year out of the University of Florida, chomp chomp, here comes the Gator to the big leagues. How about this fun fact, courtesy of Randy Gisierli, the internet's number one Royals fan. Jack Caglione, first Royals hitter to debut in the big leagues within 1 year of being drafted since?
Alex
Bo
Gordon.
Jackson. Bo Jackson, folks, which is so cool.
Sounds like Bo Jackson could have used more time in the minors to develop his.
Was that the problem?
Bo Jackson was amazing. Bo was amazing. Not a great approach.
That's true. That's true.
Before we talk about.
Bo was amazing. Not a great approach. Good transition. Jack Caglione.
Let's start here. It is not pronounced the way that it looks.
No.
All right. If you sound this out, friends, you will be wrong.
Yeah.
That is not true in regards to the first name, which is still Jack.
Yes. Which, by the way, for those wondering, his name is Jeffrey Allen Caglione. So it's more of the initials, J-A-C. I believe his dad's Jeffrey, or they have a lot of Jeffreys, and they're like, you're not a Jeff. You're Jack now. So right. Jack is good, not Jacques.
It's not Jacques, but it's Jacques.
And it's not Caglione.
So that's the thing. That's what's key. It is not Caglianoni. There is an extra A-N in there. But what I want you to do is when you see that A-N, I want you to flip it around. I want you to say, nah, okay? Because you're not going to pronounce it. It's just Caglione.
Cags for short. Yeah.
Can you please pronounce that again? Your word is Caglianone.
Cags.
No.
is the name, and this player is fascinating. So Jack Caglione was a pretty big deal in high school in Florida. He was a two-way player, and he got Tommy John, I believe, either at the end of his senior year or right when he got to school in Florida. And when he came back, it was like, oh my God, he's throwing 99 from the left side. But he has no idea where the ball's going. But he's throwing 99 from the left side, so we should probably let him do this. Unfortunately for Jack Caglione's two-way dreams, he became so good as a hitter. We've kind of referenced this with Ohtani, where it's like, man, he's so good of a hitter, you can't let him pitch anymore. That's pretty much what happened to Cags, because he was one of the more dominant and like terrifying college hitters that we've basically ever seen. And his power was so ridiculous. One of the great stat lines that I've really ever seen in college baseball: 35 homers in 66 games, 8 doubles. Okay, so what that tells you is essentially when the ball went in the air, it was going over the fence almost every time. And because his command on the mound was so lackluster, it was like, yeah, sorry, dude, you're going to be a hitter. Now, the Royals announced him as a two-way player when they drafted him 6th overall last year, but pretty much everyone knew, like, yeah, that's nice, sure. So they kind of pretend like he's going to do a little bit of both. And then once he starts hitting and he starts pro ball last year, and then certainly in spring training this year, it's like, all right, dude, no more pitching. You are an impact bat that we so desperately need, because our corner outfield has been a true catastrophe for years and years and years and years. Can you help this lineup? The reason why it was like, okay, this probably is going to take a while, is that Jack Caglione swings at everything. His chase rate was through the moon, to the moon, through whatever, however you want to describe it. He was swinging at everything in college, but what's so weird is that he wasn't striking out. He has amazing bat-to-ball skills, but because he was chasing so often, you would assume, well, once he gets into pro ball, once he starts climbing these different levels, he's going to start getting exposed. But the strikeouts have kind of still been not so bad, and he's still making so much contact. And in a way that we kind of describe with Aaron Judge, all the balls that he's putting in play are so hard that his BABIP is just very high, and he is more of a contact hitter than you would expect for someone with that kind of approach. But the key with Jack's development and why he's now with the Royals, and why this, it was like, how long is this going to take, is that he's been a first baseman the whole time. They have a first baseman in Vinny Pasquantino. They have a DH in Salvador Perez when he's not catching, or Salvador Perez who wants to play first and Vinny's playing DH, but they don't have outfielders. And Cags had not really played any outfield before he got into pro ball. They finally started moving him out there. And after, what, 12 games in AAA, they're like, okay, let's stop pretending like he isn't one of our best hitters. And now he is coming to the big leagues.
Mariners take 2 out of 3 over the Minnesota Twins. This was the Cal Raleigh show. Dear Lord.
I mean, it's not really new. I mean, he's basically, it's not like this was his first good series of the year, as Cal Raleigh
now has
23 home runs.
It's the most, right?
Most in baseball. He is a catcher. He has played every game. Not every game a catcher, but he has started every game for the Mariners. It's now been kind of written about the last couple weeks, but like he's one of the greatest seasons ever for a catcher. His home run pace is obviously far beyond, I think, basically anything we've seen. When Salvador Perez set the record for most homers in a season by a primary catcher a few years ago, a lot of that came in the second half. He really heated up in August. This is, I don't know, man. The point that I've made about Cal, which is so impressive, is like, yeah, he's hit a ton of homers over the last 3 years, but what he's been able to do from the right side of the plate recently, and now you didn't see it as much in this weekend, but that's what's really elevated him to a complete force of nature from a power perspective. But yeah, you're just not supposed to be able to do this as a catcher. And season ends today, he's second MVP. I think easily. So I don't know where he's going to end up there. But he is one of the best players in baseball, and I'm just in awe of what he is doing.
This weekend, the Mariners lose the first game of the season, even though Cal goes yard twice, because Andrés Muñoz allows runs.
Yeah, I don't know. I was promised that he would have a 0 ERA all season. I'm not sure what happened there. But this is how it happens with relievers, right? You know, it's just happened with Hoffman. It's like, well, he looks invincible, and then suddenly he has two terrible outings in a row. That happened with Munoz again. They end up winning the game on Sunday, even though Munoz allows runs again. But yeah, really ugly showing on Friday from Seattle's bullpen. Twins win that one 12-6. And then, yeah, that second game, Cole Young gets called up. Their first round pick from a couple years ago. Quick Cole Young story. I saw Cole Young play in high school. I went over. He was in Pittsburgh, and my wife was in grad school there. So went over to see Cole Young play a high school game with a scout friend of ours. And I remember at the time, there was a lot of buzz about the Reds being really interested in Cole Young. And my wife is a Reds fan. And so we went and saw this game, and Cole Young grounded out to second three times in a crappy Pittsburgh area high school game. And I was like, oh, I was telling him, I was like, man, the Reds are going to take this kid. This kid's grounding out the second. And this kid stinks. What are you talking about? Are you kidding me? Cole Young. And so over the next 2 months, I was just like, oh, man, Cole Young's going to be a Red. Reds took Cam Collier. That's not going awesome. Mariners take Cole Young. I was like, oh, boy, that kid that grounded out three times in a high school game, it's a second base. What are we talking about? Cole Young, pretty good. Turns out Cole Young's pretty good. He gets to the big leagues. And I think this is only the second high schooler from that draft to reach the big leagues after Jackson Holliday. So he has kind of zoomed through the minors. And, you know, the ceiling might not be that high, but probably going to be a pretty good player. Daniel Murphy is really the comp with him, although he might actually be able to play shortstop. So he gets the walk-off grounder and his first hit in that game on Saturday. And then Cal homers again on Sunday, and the Mariners win that one.
Nats take 2 out of 3. Over the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
Game one, weird slugfest. Yeah. James Wood, homers again. We have now reached James Wood is a big deal, for like undeniably big deal. On the Sunday night broadcast, I don't even remember the context. At one point, Eduardo Perez goes, you haven't watched James Wood yet. Make sure you go watch yourself some James Wood. And I'm like, that's how you know. That's like part of the way you know, right? Like they're not shouting out even like Lawrence Butler.
That was during Dodgers Yankees?
Yeah, during Dodgers Yankees. They're just like, go watch James Wood. They're like, okay, I am. He homers in that first game. Game two, all-time hilarious game in which the Nats put up 10 in the first. Brandon Pfaadt can't get an out. I tried
literally
cannot
they
get an out.
They batted around without getting an out. Yeah.
No outs. Tried to tell everybody that the Diamondbacks rotation was overrated. I tried to say it, and I want to be clear about something now. I was right about this before Corbin Burnes got hurt. Okay? Because the record will show at the end of the year that the ERA was worse than people thought, and it'll be like, well, Corbin Burnes got hurt, which is what happened on Sunday. Leaves with an elbow injury. Bullpen steps up. Diamondbacks win 3-1.
Yeah, this is a huge deal, right? So Corbin Burnes was injured a few weeks ago, and that was shoulder. If he's got an elbow thing, I mean, this is if Corbin Burnes like needs elbow surgery, that's a bigger conversation that we can have later this week. Hopefully that's not the case. Either way, Corbin Burnes was pitching well. It was one D-back pitcher that was pitching well, and they managed to win this game, which is good. But we are officially in a dangerous territory for Arizona, I would say, for a lot of reasons. And you say, oh, they were overrated. That's clearly the correct take. Did we think they would be awful? I mean, maybe you did, but that's kind of where we're at now. The bullpen has also been an issue, of course, but these teams have the same record. Nats and Snakes have the same record, 28-31.
My thought process going into the year was Corbin Burnes is great. That will be fine. Gallen is slowly declining. Merrill Kelly is old and doing his best. Brandon Pfaadt is okay. And Eduardo Rodriguez is not trustworthy. And that's kind of what's happened.
26th in rotation ERA, 26th in bullpen ERA. They're top 5 to 7 in basically every offensive category, but you can only, we just saw it last year. You can only outscore your own bad pitching for so long. So Snakes are not awesome. And by the way, Snakes are in fourth place. The Nats are in third place. Now, that has more to do with the Braves than it does, you know, everything else. But credit to the Nationals for being, they're fun to watch. I like watching.
I will be around them this week. I am currently in Washington, D.C. to look for apartments, or as some people call them, flats, as I am moving to DC later this summer.
Email us baseballbarbecast@gmail.com if you are in England and call them flats.
Some people call them flats. I don't have to tell you. Just because you don't.
Anyway, I want to find an American that calls them a flat. I would love to.
I'm hunting for flats out here. And so I'll be at the Nats this week as they take on the Cubs. And I'm excited to just see what this team is. They're playing well. They, I believe, are 4-1 since Ken Rosenthal came for their head top on The Athletic, and they responded. Dodgers take 2 out of 3 over the Yankees. Game one was a weird banger, which I will still listen to. First bad start for Max Fried. Allows 6 earnies. Top of the first, Judge homer. Bottom of the first, Otani homer.
Rigged, scripted.
Hell yeah, dude.
What's going on?
No notes.
What's going on? This can't be real.
If you're a hater, that's fine. These guys are better than your favorite player. That's just what it is, right? Who's your favorite player? Doesn't matter. They're worse than these guys. They are.
Yep. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's good. And it's not like, you know, it's not like Max Fried won to allow home run to Otani.
Yeah.
But he allowed 2 to Otani. And Dodgers win this one 8-5. Again, first bad Fried start of the season. Yeah. So that's disappointing in the context of this game, but it's a reminder of how good he's been.
Game two, the Dodgers give Will Warren a swirly.
Oh, yeah.
They win 18-2, and Dalton Rushing, friend of the program, gets his first career homer off of position player pitching in Pablo Reyes. And I think that he's probably mad about that.
I had the same thought. He didn't look Dalton. He looked like he was enjoying it, but whatever, you'll take it. You'll take the stats, but it was probably not how he envisioned it. But also, you'd still rather do that than pop out against Pablo Reyes.
Sure. Best case scenario, it's kind of a lose-lose situation.
Yeah,
we'll get back to Otani falling asleep in a second. Game three is the first bad Yamamoto start. Ryan Yarbrough, who is, dude, he's awesome. He's so great. Awesome. He's like, when we talk about, oh man, that pitcher's fun to watch. What we really are saying is that guy throws really hard and his breaking ball moves a ton. When we talk about Ryan Yarbrough, it is the opposite. He is smoke and mirrorsing you to death. He is crafty. He is the epitome of a crafty lefty. I love everything about Ryan Yarbrough, and I just want him to get a postseason start so badly. And I know that won't happen.
Wouldn't count on that. But what he's doing this year, and this is the first year he's like striking people out essentially ever in his career. So I'm not entirely sure how that's happening. But what he has done basically his whole career is get weak contact. If you look at the lowest hard hit rate allowed or lowest average exit velocity allowed, he has been in like the top 3rd percentile every season of his career with the lowest average fastball velocity essentially in the league for anyone that's throwing that many innings. He's doing it with funk. He's doing it from the left side with a weird arm angle. He's switching it up. He's throwing a bunch of cutters and weird sweepers and stuff. How he is managing almost a strikeout per inning this year for basically the first time in his career, nearly a 25% strikeout rate, is amazing and probably a credit to Yankees pitching development, I would have to imagine. You know, he's been with some good, smart teams and he's had a great career, but this is a new level for him and it was an amazing display.
Two main things with Yarbrough to get a little nerdy about it. Cutter usage up a ton.
Yeah.
Change up grip different that allows him to get a lot more depth.
There's
more whiffs for the changeup, and I would imagine it's coming out of the cutter window similarly and whatever. Point is, there's a dude throwing 87, just carving up the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's freaking
terrible. So he's just like in their rotation, just been giving him 5 good starts in a row.
And each time it's like Yarbrough again, and each time Boone more confidently is like Yarbrough again.
Hey, don't stop at this point. I mean, he is giving him everything you could possibly ask for. Otherwise, in this game, we've got a Ben Rice homer. The top 4 Dodgers hitters were held scoreless for the first time all season. Now, that's a little goofy because Mookie Betts was not playing. We can get to that in a second. And then did you see at the end, Scott Boras catching a foul ball?
No,
did you see this?
No, I did not see that.
Oh, this was literally the last 3 innings when the game was kind of out of hand. I forget who the hitter was, but Scott Boras, who sits right behind home plate, kind of off to the right on the third base side with his Boras lieutenants, literally row. A ball like fell. It's rare to see a foul ball land in the first row because of the angle that it has to take, but it landed essentially like in his lap and he just missed it. And then he was holding onto the ball and they kept showing him. Buster only went down and interviewed him. And he said some line about, it was a very Scott Boras-esque interview. And it was just a funny little moment for Scott Boras to get more screen time.
He caught the foul ball. He was like, this team's not paying this guy enough. It's like, no, Scott. Turn it off.
Yeah. And whatever. He goes to all of his Dodgers games, but it is interesting to me because like the Dodgers are not a team until they signed Snell. That hasn't been a team that has had a lot of Boras clients, right? Otani, famously, not Boras. Mookie, not Boras. Freddie, not Boras, right? A lot of these guys. Muncy, not Boras. A lot of these guys. So, you know, he's got Conforto. He's got Cody Bellinger. You know, he's got some of these other guys. But a lot of them are injured. Gerrit Cole and Blake Snell not participating in this series. Other things for this series quickly.
Otani fell asleep.
Hold on. We'll finish on Otani fall asleep. Muncy's heating up. He's been incredible the last couple weeks. That's a big deal for them if some of their other hitters are not going to be awesome, including Mookie Betts, who fractured his toe, seemingly just like stubbing it in the middle. He said he just bumped into something, like was walking in. He said he was going to the bathroom in the dark and just like kicked something and broke his toe. Are you saying you don't believe him?
No, I totally believe him. I'm saying, isn't this what happened with Freddie's ankle? He was like getting into the shower.
He slipped. I think that was more a slip than a bump, than like a stub. But yeah, okay. I think so. Come on, Dodgers. What are we doing? Can we clean it up here off the field so we're not losing our MVP?
Sure. I say this to my wife.
Doesn't seem like he's going to be out. Yeah.
My wife will like move too fast sometimes and like bark. And I'll be like, slow down.
Yeah, Mookie. I don't know how badly he needed to go to the bathroom, but now he has a fractured toe. He did not play in any of these games. It sounds like he will be back at some point soon. It's just pain tolerance, but it's just another strange plot point in the Mookie Betts season. And then also after last night's game, some strange stuff with Luke Weaver, who was supposed to pitch and then had a hamstring issue and couldn't come in. Jason Dominguez has some sort of thumb injury. We'll see if either of those is significant, but just wanted to mention those. But as you said, most important thing, Shohei Ohtani appears to have fallen asleep during Saturday's game, during the blowout. They cut to him. I still can't find out exactly when this happened, but there's a clip of him essentially leaning his head on the dugout, not on the dugout railing, but like inside on the lower level. And he kind of nods off for a second and he's like, I'm here. I'm awake. I got a hit next inning. And if the screen cap that I saw is accurate, like this is not when Ohtani had been taken out of the game. This is at the top of the fifth when the Dodgers are up 10-1. He goes back and gets a hit in the bottom of the fifth. What do you think about this, Jake Mintz?
A lot of thoughts, some of which I now need to change after I slept through my alarm this morning. I don't think it's a good look that the game's most prominent player fell asleep on the primetime Saturday night broadcast between the two teams that were in the World Series. Hey, everyone, tune in. Ohtani loved it so much, he conked out. Like,
yeah, it is such a like, does this make me like him more or less? I think still more.
I'm neutral.
It is pretty amazing.
So Ohtani is obsessed with sleep now.
Yes.
I wrote a little bit about this, hilariously enough, last week.
Yeah.
I'm talking about his recovery. He like got really into Whoop a couple years ago. He tracks his sleep. When he did the GQ 10 items I can't live without, they were all about sleep and recovery or just his game equipment. It is the single most boring 10 items I can't live without that you'll ever watch. It's like my bat, my glove, my cleats.
And then my sleep mask.
My sleep mask. Like
my pillow.
My phone.
Yeah.
My pillow.
Like, oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, cool, man. Like, could you give me something?
Listen.
No. Anyway, this is what he does. He conks off. He sleeps. He did pitch that afternoon, right? He threw the live on Saturday.
Yeah. No, that's true.
So maybe
that's true.
He was tired from that.
Yeah. Two homers the night before. Live BP. Still don't really know where that's going, but
he got a hit after this, right?
Yes, I believe so. Again, it seems that he was still in the game, got a hit the next inning.
So you know what they say: some guys can just roll out of bed and hit. Just roll out of dugout.
Yeah, just roll out of dugout and collect knocks. Otani's amazing. Great. We love him dearly. That is it for this segment. When we return, we have seven more series and we're going to go fast. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbershops.
And welcome back, Baseball Barbercast. Let's go fast.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
It's turbo mode time. Jake, where would you like to begin?
I would like to begin in Atlanta with a tweet from Mark Bowman of MLB.com, who tweets, "No music being played as the Red Sox take BP. This is something Braves players requested after they took BP without any music playing at Fenway 2 weeks ago." This is, honestly, it's so petty. I think I like it. Like, it is childish and it is stupid and it is pointless, but it's kind of hilarious. The reason it's irrational is because there's no way the Red Sox players went to stadium ops before they played the Braves and were like, "Hey, can you make sure it's silent when they are taking BP?" This is not the player's fault. And that's kind of what this makes it sound like. Still, it is a level of pettiness that we don't often get in baseball.
And look what happened. Trevor Story hits a home run and the Red Sox win this series. They win 5-1 on Friday. Braves bounce back on Saturday. Schwellenbach was outstanding. Austin Riley and Acuna both homer. Walker Buehler was not awesome. So as the Braves lose this one, or Braves win this one 5-0. And then in game three, it's like, ooh, is Christian Campbell going to play first base? Alex Cora, you told us Christian Campbell was going to play first base. And he's like, no, Abraham Toro is scorching hot. We can't take him out of the lineup. Abraham
and everyone's
Toro,
like, what?
Who? What? What's going on? Red Sox continue to be weird. But the headline in this one is not Abraham Toro, although he did have two hits. It's Garrett Crochet, who is awesome. Once again, 7 innings, 12 strikeouts, 112 pitches as the Red Sox win this game and this series. Nice little bounce back for Boston. This was good to see.
Rangers 2 out of 3 over the Cardinals. Texas offensive breakout in games 1 and 3 of this series. Brett Boone has a podcast. He knows ball. They win 11-1, crushing Matthew Liberatore and the bullpen. Jack Leiter's great. Wyatt Langford and Marcus Semien homer. Marcus Semien, like, just what is just
anything? Again, if he can get going, he's been so bad, that'd be nice for them.
And a great example that things are happening in all corners of the baseball world at all times, and I can't follow all of them. Sam Haggerty led off for the Rangers in this game. I had no idea. Game two, Sonny Gray is awesome for the Cardinals. 7 scoreless with 10 Ks, and the Cardinals win 2-0. Game three, Jacob DeGrom lowers his ERA to 2.34 as the Rangers win 8-1. If the Rangers do decide to blow it up, Josh Smith is such a sneaky good trade chip. Underrated as hell, literally just because his name is Josh Smith. Like, that's the problem. You should go by Osh.
Something a little bit more Osh. Yeah, there Osh. We go. That'd be a little bit more memorable than Josh. I'm in on that.
Smith,
yes,
he dropped the J.
He can do a lot of things for a ball club.
A lot.
I think if he gets traded, that will be the first thing that someone says about him. Rangers win 8-1. And yes, DeGrom has been awesome. We should talk about him more, but not today. Let's stay in Houston. Stay in Texas, I should say. As the Astros and Rays split a 4-game series, no mop this time for either team. On Thursday, the Rays explode for 10 runs after the 6th inning and win 13-3. Game two of this one was fascinating. We get a leadoff home run for Jose Caballero, and then Fromber just dials it in, goes CG, 83 pitches, Yiner Diaz walk-off home run, Astros win 2-1. Rays offense explodes again in game three. We get 2 Junior Caminero home runs. Okay, so we had a 83-pitch complete game from Fromber on Friday and a 117-pitch complete game from Zach Littell on Saturday as the Rays win 16-3. I would love to have more complete games where the pitcher is just like, hey, we're up by a ton, so just like go out there and just throw it over the middle. We don't need to waste a position player or a reliever on this game. Shouts out to you, Zach Littell. Then on Sunday, Hunter Brown is fantastic. Taj Bradley, also fantastic, but the Astros win this one 1-0. Some weird stuff going on with Yordan Alvarez and his hand injury. We should probably cover that a little bit more, but we don't really have specifics on his timeline just yet. Do you have a nugget about Zach Littell?
Well, yeah. First outing with 9 innings and 10 hits since Jameson Taillon in 2018. Oh. 9 innings, so, 10 hits. Don't see that
right,
a lot.
Right. To stay in that long and allow 10 hits and still win the game is pretty impressive.
It's also not that many hits because it's like...
That's true.
Just over 1 an inning, but...
That's not so bad.
Usually if you throw 9, you allow like 3 hits. We also had Taylor Walls getting tossed.
Oh, my God. Oh
on
my
Sunday.
God.
Dude. That guy sucks, man. That guy sucks.
Like he got ejected because it seems that he tapped his helmet as if to be like to express his discontent with the call, which you are explicitly not allowed to do, which is to mock the umpires by tapping your helmet to call for the challenge that doesn't exist yet. The guy that threw him out was Nick Lentz, who had the perfect game recently. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
That Nick Lentz is like, don't
yeah,
you?
This was a perfect move because he clearly taps his head. Like, he absolutely does do it, right? Yeah. Because the reason you can tell is he's fixing his helmet. Like, he is legitimately fixing the helmet. And then he looks at the umpire, taps his head twice. The umpire tosses him, and he acts like he didn't do anything. It was the most childish, goofy BS of all time. He's like, oh, who, me? I didn't do anything. Get out of here, dog.
Yeah. It's too bad Rays missed out on a Taylor Walls at bat. Cubs take 2 out of 3 over the Reds. The Reds, what to do? They still haven't been swept this season, but they do lose another series. Andrew Abbott, awesome on Friday. They win that one 6-2. Ben Brown, Mr. Bulk Boy, Ben Brown. 6 scoreless
Bulk
innings.
Boy,
how about
Ben
that?
Brown.
Cubs win this one late 2-0, and then we get a Michael Busch homer on Sunday. PCA, 3 more hits and 2 steals. Ellie De La Cruz hits a home run after his sister passed away. Very emotional moment for Ellie amidst what has been kind of a tough season for him. Cool moment for Ellie, but the Reds still struggle in this one. Nick Martinez was not great, and the Cubs bullpen has quietly really turned it on in the last few weeks, and that is important if we're going to take the Cubs seriously. Cubs win this one 7-3.
Giants over the Marlins. I watched every last pitch of this live.
Yeah, no, I did. At the wedding you were at? You were like, guys, excuse me. Eduardo Cabrera
is
pitching.
You put the game
on? Not quite. But Giants take this one pretty comfortably.
Pretty comfortably. Marlins do a whole roster carousel before this game, including DFAing Ronnie Simon, the guy who cried.
Yeah.
Tears.
Let's see if he gets picked up or if he's going back to AAA. It's not why they DFA'd him, to be clear.
Yes, it is.
It was an unfortunate sequence.
Yes, it is. They don't want men to show emotion, so they get rid of the ones of us that do.
I feel like Gabe Kapler would want more tears. He was like, actually, he didn't cry enough.
We need
back
more
to AAA
tears
with you.
I don't feel like summarizing the series. Guardians over the Angels. Jose Soriano is really good in game one, which is like, he's a good pitcher. Like he's
good.
He's good. Trout back, hitting 5th for the first time in his career. Angels win that one. Game 2, Ramirez, Kwan, Santana, all go yard at just the most Cleveland sentence of all time. Nolan Jones with an inside the park Little League error homer. Gardas win a weird one. Trout, 3 hits, batting 6th. Ron Washington is like, this guy's got everyone on this ball club's got to earn it.
I will say, it does the mind games of like, how much better the lineup looks when Trout's hitting 6th. You're like, man, if Trout's hitting 6th, this might be a good team. Oh my God, Angels are so funny. Anyway, they lose on Sunday. Gavin Williams was good. Jack Johanowicz was not good. Jose Ramirez homers. Wild Angels stat that I did not realize. They've only used 5 starting pitchers the whole year. They are the only team that can say that. Their rotation has stayed as is from day one. Tyler Anderson, Kyle Hendricks, Yusei Kikuchi, Jose Soriano, Jack Johanowicz. I don't know how much longer that's going to last, and it's not like it's working. have a bad record and a bad rotation ERA, but in this day and age, it is amazing to have your rotation be intact this long into the season.
Neto, Shanuel, Moncada, Ward, Soler, Trout.
Sounds pretty good.
Sounds
one more series. Padres over the Pirates. Padres win a close one on Friday. Did the Pirates get screwed from bad umpiring in the late in that game? Of course they did. Is that why the Pirates are bad? No. On Saturday, Bailey Falter was great. Nice little angry win for the Pirates after they got screwed by the umps on Friday.
Yeah.
5-0 Pittsburgh. Very impressive showing from Bailey Falter there. And then on Sunday, it's like, ooh, Are the Pirates going to snag this series against the Padres? Are the Padres going to lose another series at home? Like, what is going on? Again, we thought they were going to be undefeated at Petco Park. No. They do manage to come back, though. Four runs in the seventh. Yeah. Padres come back, win 6-4, and take the series.
Bailey Falter with his, what I'm calling a ball and play jamboree. 6 1/3, 2 hits, 1K, no runs.
Two hits, though. I guess the defense was cooking.
It just means that, like, your defense is, you're either getting really lucky with batted ball luck, you know? It's only the 12th such outing in the last decade where it's 6 innings, 2 hits, 1K, no runs. 12th outing in the last decade. Bailey Falter now has 2 of those.
All right. I don't know what that, to say that that's a skill. I would not recommend this as your style of pitching, but it seems to be working for him just fine. That is all the Major League Baseball that happened this weekend. Just a couple quick shout outs to the wild weekend in college baseball that we had that will continue here on Monday. Before we get to D1 regionals, we just have to mention, let's close the loop. They did it. LSU Shreveport.
They did it.
Went 59-0. I highlighted them going into the NAIA tournament a few weeks ago, and this team, the Pilots of LSU Shreveport, did get it done. The first undefeated season in college baseball history, longest winning streak in college baseball history. They just dominated the whole time, and that, I mean, it's, yeah, whatever level, one of the great seasons in college athletics history. So shouts out to the Pilots. Good for them. But let's turn our attention back to Division One, because we had our regionals weekend. Oh, yeah.
They go 59-0 while the Rockies are going 9-50.
Both wear purple. The D1 regionals began.
So I would actually like to do it this way.
Sure.
There are, I believe, 6 more games tonight.
Yes. 6 more.
7 more? 6 more?
6 more games. Yep.
Put some time aside for those. Like,
yeah,
they're going to be
most of them
great.
Are tonight. Yep.
We have North Carolina, but for all of these, winner moves on, loser goes home. All right. North Carolina, Oklahoma, USC, Oregon State, Murray State, Ole Miss, Murray State, Cinderella here, trying to hang on and steal one from Ole Miss. Wake Forest, Tennessee. If you're going to watch one,
that's the best
one.
That one. Watch that one.
LSU last night. If they won, they move on. Lost at home to Little Rock. It is the first time that LSU lost at home to a 4 seed in a regional ever. Okay, so the way the regionals work, there's 1, 2, 3s, and 4s. There's 16 of those things. LSU hosts, like, on average every year. They have never lost to a 4 seed before.
Can I pause and talk about Little Rock for a second? This is outrageous.
33, baby.
This is outrageous. Little Rock was, at one point this season, 19-32. They get into the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament as the 8 seed in the Ohio Valley, which is not a great conference. They win 5 straight games to win the conference tournament in the Ohio Valley. They enter the tournament with the worst record in of all 64 teams. And now here they are. Now, in all likelihood, they're going to lose by like 30 tonight. But if they pull this off, it's one of the great upsets in college baseball history. It already was last night, I would say. But this would be truly, I think, unprecedented, as you just mentioned. So, and by the way, theme of the week, which is that hosts keep losing. No one's good at college baseball this year. Dude. We got the top 2 seeds are out. Vandy's out. Georgia's out. Texas is out.
We don't do the gambling, but I have all the lines in front of me. Because it's built into the ESPN now. All of the games are a team minus 240, minus 200, minus 375, minus 300, minus 165. LSU is minus 3,000, okay? They are minus 3,000.
Which is probably
tonight.
Close to that in the game last night, too. Okay. I don't know what the odds were then.
Tune in and check that out.
Anyway, so all kinds of wild upsets in this Division I tournament. So it's been it has been a fun week so far.
Unfortunately, Northeastern, who we were hoping would embarrass Mississippi State after Mississippi State bullied them. Northeastern went 0-2 in this regional against Mississippi State. Thankfully, Mississippi State did get bounced by Florida State. Makes me feel a little bit better.
Yes. Yes. But anyway, so all kinds of wild stuff. I would encourage everyone to go look up how Boston Smith finished his career at Wright State, hitting like 17 homers in his last 10 games or something. Anyway, that's it on college baseball for now. I'm sure we will continue to cover it as the tournament goes on. Last thing before we say goodbye, June 2nd, today, Lou Gehrig Day.
Oh.
We have to mention, as I mean, we've mentioned her a million times, but as you see a lot today and just this week about ALS and about Lou Gehrig's disease and about Sarah Langs, the GOAT, one of our favorite humans who has been battling ALS now for a while and is just truly one of the most spectacular human beings that we've ever encountered, let alone get to know and call a friend. And as you see stuff about Sarah today, and as you have, just understand that none of it even comes close to describing how impressive of a person she is, let alone someone that we get to still benefit from all the time as someone is in our space. So we love you, Sarah. And we are going to, you know, contribute to some ALS funds this week for sure.
Speak for yourself. I'm still on the fence on Sarah Langs.
Oh, yeah. Maybe she can win you over at some point.
Well, I was going to say maybe today. I'll get swayed one way or the other. Sarah, text me, make your pitch. Should I be in on Sarah Langs? I know you're listening.
We're all in.
I'm on the fence. Quickly on Sarah. Like, there's a million things. Just the fact that she's still working as hard and as often and as fervently and as passionately as she ever has, and how the output is the same.
Yep.
You know? It's the same. Yeah. And that's just a remarkable thing. And so cheers, Sarah. Jordan is a fan. I'll
Jake's still thinking about it. So send some love towards Sarah's way today on Lou Gehrig Day. That's it. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to TJ Brassel for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you all for sending us your favorite words. Maybe we'll come back on that and do that on Wednesday. You can keep sending those in. We asked on Thursday ahead of the spelling bee. Send us your favorite word. Keep those coming, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We'll read some of those on Wednesday. But until then, thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.